Want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media? You are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
This is The Scoop, a weekly regional roundup of stories from remote radio stations in British Columbia. Each week, The Scoop features news created by fellow LJI journalists in the communities of Smithers, Prince George, Nanaimo, Burnaby, and the Comox Valley. LJI is the local journalism initiative, and it's how your best local news is funded on these participating stations. Now, let's see what's happening this week in BC.
Today on The Scoop, on April 14th, purple flags lined Lafargue Lake in Coquitlam, BC, each flag representing the lives lost to toxic drug poisoning in BC, something the Tri-Cities Community Action Team is trying to fix. Danny Nesvarandi at CJSF in Burnaby dives in. An alternative underground zine called Void celebrates 2 years of publishing. Ian Gregg at CIFR Radio has more. For 21 years, the Vancouver Island Short Film Festival has been celebrating short films and giving space for new and upcoming talent to showcase their work. Lauren McKenzie at CHLY reports in Nanaimo. And at Coast Mountain College in Smithers, a unique opportunity is giving locals affordable nail care through a nail tech course that has real potential for young entrepreneurs. Pam Hassan at CACK News has more. I'm Daniel Messick, and you're listening to The Scoop.
Reporting from Coquitlam, BC, this is Danny Nesvarandi, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On April 14th, purple flags could be seen planted along the entire perimeter of Lafarge Lake in Coquitlam, BC. Planted by the Tri-Cities Community Action Team, each flag represents lives lost to the toxic drug crisis in BC. April 14th was also the 10th anniversary of the province of British Columbia declaring a public health emergency due to toxic drug deaths. Since then, over 18,000 people have died due to toxic drug poisoning. As part of the Tri-Cities Community Action Team's memorial, they'd set up a table at Lafarge Lake as well with resources and members of the Community Action Team available for discussion and support. CJSF went down to Lafarge Lake where we spoke with Ian Knight, a peer with the Tri-Cities Community Action Team, and Roxanne Saxon, the organization's program coordinator, about the significance of this memorial for them. First, take a listen to Ian Knight.
I grew up in New Westminster, Burnaby area. I've recently joined the TC Action, Tri-Cities Action Team, and I'm very proud to be here today to try to make a difference in the crisis that we are in right now with the drugs and the toxicity of the drugs. Yeah, I have my own experience and stuff, like experiences with trauma and addiction as well. So it's that's the biggest reason why I'm here, is because of having that experience myself and being unhoused for many years. And I want to say at the very least 15 years of my life I was on the streets and addicted to substances. And so, yeah, I'm just happy to be here today, and like, it's a strong reminder of like why I want to be where I am today and not where I was. Right? You know? So yeah, I'm grateful to be here, and yeah, I'm just gonna continue trying to make a difference, you know.
Next, we asked Roxanne Saxon what some of the support resources were for those who attended the memorial.
So we have the Tri-Cities Community Action Team, so that's we have a bunch of resources for different community partners. So we're kind of here to bridge those gaps for those who are not with us, but but also on site we have Naloxone, who does youth-to-youth education within schools, within the SD43, but now they're expanding. We have Fraser Health Overdose Outreach Team, who works a lot one-on-one with clients and trying to navigate where they are with their substance use on a spectrum. I'm just kind of meeting them where they're at and helping them work through their goals. We have Progressive Housing, who's right now doing outreach within the community, but they're also doing the winter shelter up until the end of the month. So they're here to serve the unhoused community and help them get housed. And we actually have a rock star with us who's seven or eight people within the community is able to find housing for them. And then we have Cher, who does substance use counseling and beyond, so for youth and both adults. And recently they just opened up the Foundry, so that's for youth, wraparound services for youth for 12 to 24 ages. Yeah, so that's who is with us today. Oh, we also had Aster earlier, and they're no longer there. We traded places with Cher, but they were here earlier, and they do one-on-one counseling with youth specifically, and a lot of like outreach, so meeting them where they're at instead of them coming to them.
Later in our conversation, we asked them of their thoughts on the BC government's decision to end the three-year pilot project to decriminalize the possession of illicit drugs. Here is what they had to say.
Well, I think that whole project, that whole pilot was very confusing. So they implicated it, but it wasn't very clear on what that really meant. And then all of a sudden, like, different communities were panicking. It's like, oh my gosh, it's going to be around our children at the parks. When that's not, like, people have morals at the end of the day. Like, that they're not, that's not where people are using substances. So that there's, like, all this panic around it. And then so there's just a lot of misinformation and unclear, and people weren't really sure. Like, but the problem is, like, the government's like, oh, it didn't work. Okay, well, it didn't work because you didn't have the other services in place, you didn't have the other funding for the treatment or holistic healing or wraparound services. I'm a huge advocate for wraparound services. So like, people just need to go to one place. That's all you need. You shouldn't have to go to five different places or make 20 different phone calls just to kind of get help. So it's like, I don't know, if I had to make 20 different phone calls, I'm like, no thank you. So it's frustrating for people. So just have one place to go. And I mean, then you would see decriminalization work if you had the other resources in place.
I can't agree with you more. Wraparound services are a big part of it. I mean, because I know for me, if I had to call when I was entrenched in my addiction, I wouldn't have it. It's just too much to be taking on. I couldn't even make appointments, let alone making phone calls, you know what I mean? Especially multiple phone calls. So yeah, like Roxanne said, it's like, you know, wraparound services in one place would be ideal, just to make it a lot easier to bridge those gaps for people. Yeah.
Lastly, we asked them of the response they'd been receiving from community members throughout the day.
For sure. If it hasn't touched you, people are surprised. But I think, like, the messaging has actually been really well received. Like, even, I don't know, people aren't offended by the messaging, which is great. Like, we don't really have anybody kind of protesting against some of the messages, which is nice. So it's like that compassion in the community is there that you can feel. But there's always people, like, they had no idea what naloxone is still. So it's good. Like, even, like, it's a rainy day, so we're not getting a lot of people, and that's okay. But we've had a couple of meaningful conversations that make it all worth it.
This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. Personally, I wasn't born with the internet, but close enough to that event that over my very extensive life, I've witnessed print media steadily shrink away from presence in day-to-day life in every community I've lived in. And so it was a rare occurrence in Prince George County today when one day there just appeared into existence a little printed zine. It was called Void. It was a roughly 7x5-inch black and white booklet featuring all these different arts and culture things going on in the community. And I thought, what a wonderful oddity. But press the fast forward button. 2 years later, here we are, April 2026. Void Zine is celebrating its 2-year anniversary. It's become a consistently publish and produce monthly zine, appearing in places where all the local cool kids roam. And in studio today, I happen to have Zofia Mushimansky, locally based editor, publisher, and creator of Void Zine.
Yes.
Thanks so much for joining us in the studio, for finding your way through the void of space and time to C4 Radio Studios. How does it feel so far? You're 2 years in on this project.
It's pretty awesome. When I originally started it, it was just kind of like a little for fun thing. And the first place I distributed it was actually Omnica Arts Center, which is one of our very loved venues. I'm sure you know that. And people just started DMing me on the account, and they'd send me like photos of old zines, or they'd get really excited and be like, when is the next one coming? So I started to put them out every month. When I originally started the project with one of my ex-partners who wasn't like super creative or anything, and I eventually took it on. And it's just kind of snowballed. It's turned into like this big community thing and a safe place for a lot of people. And for me, like, I'm physically disabled. My health has kind of snowballed in the last couple of years. So Void has been an awesome way for me to support the music scene and the art scene without having to show up to every single show. That makes sense.
And some people listening aren't going to be familiar with what a zine is. What is a zine? What is this? What are we talking about?
So a zine is basically like a DIY magazine. You can choose your aesthetic. You can choose what kind of things you want to publish it. And typically you make the pages either digitally or like through collaging or basically whatever medium you want to use. And then you put the pages together, print it, and physically, you know, staple it, cut it, whatever you do to put it together. And you can either sell them. A lot of people sell them for like a dollar cheaper. Mine are free personally because it's just a passion project and a way to support the scene. I print a list of shows every single month in the back of it as well. So it's mainly supporting the music and the arts. Yeah, and anybody can make them. There's so many guides on the internet. You can find them. I know people that make zines on how to make zines, funny enough. But yeah, you can do it for anything. I have zines from all over Canada. I have some from Street Cats in Calgary. They're like a harm reduction type organization. So they produce zines on harm reduction and like safe supply information and things like that. Like you can go anywhere with a zine, basically.
Messaging in the content is things that maybe you can't get out in alternative means very easily anyway. Within the world of media, independent media, mainstream media, commercial media, et cetera, there are barriers and gatekeepers and, I don't know, various obstacles along
Absolutely.
The way.
There's a lot of censorship, too, in media. And when it comes to a zine, when you're the publisher, the editor, the person making it, you can really choose what you want to put in it. If you want it to be political, it can be political. If you want to talk about stuff that's not talked about, you can. And I like to do that a lot with the Void. I put a lot of political pieces in there. I have people that submit political pieces, and it's become like a really large part of Void, actually.
What is the Instagram if people want to engage in that world of social media and follow it in the not so tangible digital space?
Void Zine, instead of the O in Void, it's a zero.
Okay. You're going to school at the College of New Caledonia for fine art certification. Also informs this. Thinking about the content of the zine a little more, you put a lot of energy into supporting the local arts and culture scene, music especially. Like, I see a lot of local bands featured in there. You have event listings all the time.
Yeah.
Is that another passion of yours?
Yes,
obviously,
it is.
It must be.
Live music is a massive passion of mine. When my mental health wasn't great, live music is what saved me. It really brought me back, and it's just really important to me to keep the scene supported and going. And the zine has been a really awesome way for a lot of the younger audience, like high school kids, elementary school kids, to come in because they can pick it up at the mall for free. There's not a lot of things kids can pick up for free, right, without them getting in trouble. So it's become a really big thing for the younger audience, and it's got them coming to shows. We're selling out Omnica regularly, which is amazing. It's crazy.
We're 2 years into the Void project.
Yes.
What was kind of the seed that began this journey?
Honestly, it was just me and my ex-partner throwing around ideas, and I was like, it'd be fun to make a little zine that's like kind of black metal aesthetic, because you don't see them anymore. And I don't know, I have ADHD, so I just get on a creative idea and I have to do it, and that's kind of just what happened. And it snowballed, and it just had so much support and love from the start that it just kept me going.
one of the barriers with ADHD is, you know, the
Absolutely.
Having that wonderful inspiration and maybe even getting all the way to 90% completed something, but that last little
yeah.
hurdle is like, eh, okay, then it just goes into the bin. It sits there forever. But you got this one out into the world.
Yeah.
People actually vibe with it. There's a spark. It's been gaining momentum from
Absolutely.
My perspective since.
Thank you.
Which
yeah.
is pretty spectacular.
It is, especially like as an emerging artist. A lot of my life I've been told my art is too dark, it's too weird, it's too this, too that, whatever. And just having so many people like demanding it on the first of every month, just like waiting, is absolutely insane. Like I distribute them at multiple local locations, one of them being Black Sheep in the Mall. My best friend's family owns and operates it, and I get a message on like the 5th of every month after I drop them off, hey, we only have 10 copies left. I drop off 45 copies at that specific location. It's like, you guys are crazy for it, and it's amazing.
That's very reaffirming.
It is. That's it really is.
Through following your passion, you have discovered a niche that has not been filled in the community, and there's clearly a demand for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. it's honestly so cool. It's really reaffirming as an artist, especially as a disabled artist. Like, there's not a lot of ways I can contribute to the art community due to my health issues and stuff. And the zine has been a really awesome way to do that, and it's just been really fulfilling for me. There's not a single month or time where I'm like, oh my God, I have to do this, and I dread it. Like, I love it. Even when I'm in pain and like trying to put them together, I'm still happy and it's still fulfilling for me. And I don't think that'll ever change.
This one aspect that is also great about the zine is just how accessible it is. You've mentioned that like if people aren't necessarily familiar with the precise, exact format of the Void magazine, they don't necessarily get knocked off the
no.
submission list. And it's like, oh, try again later when you get it right. You're pretty accommodating. About,
yes, I am. I try my best to be.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever turned anyone away, actually. I think I've printed every single thing that's been sent to me.
So, people interested in getting their copy of Void Magazine, where can they find it?
That's a good question. You can find them at Black Sheep Gifts and Sunrise Records in the mall, as well as Second Thoughts downtown, Omnica Arts Center, and up here at Seifer Radio Station.
Woo!
Yeah.
Right. And we're happy to drop a couple copies off at Degrees Coffee. For anybody listening, if you're in for some Joe, do you head up to UMBC? If you see a Void Mag around, that's Sophia. Check out the zine anytime. Also look it up on Instagram.
Yes.
It's a ride. Congratulations on a second anniversary.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for Seifer Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM.
Sichuan News Update. Local and international short films will be on full display this weekend at the Malaspina Theater at Vancouver Island University. For 21 years, the Vancouver Island Short Film Festival, or VISFF, have been celebrating short films and giving space for new upcoming talent to showcase their work. Johnny Blakeborough is a president and co-founder of the VISFF. He tells CHY that this year they are partnering with the Cinevic Short Circuit out of Victoria to present a special program of short films from Vancouver Island and Gulf Island filmmakers.
So this is our first ever locals-only program. Often we have local films in our festival every year, but they are spread out amongst the program with international. But this is just Vancouver and Gulf Island filmmakers. 9 films from all over the island and the Gulf Islands, and we're really excited to see how that works.
The Short Circuit Showcase will be presented on Friday, April 17th at 1 p.m. at the Malaspina Theater. Blakeborough says having the festival showcase films locally and internationally gives the audience the best of both worlds.
I like having a great festival that shows content from everywhere in the world. We have films from Iran, we have film from Moldova, France, all over Canada. But having some local connection as well is really important, and also getting filmmakers to see their films with these other films, international films, is a really great experience.
He says the festival also allows local and youth filmmakers to meet and build community with other filmmakers from around the world.
One of the things that we're doing this year that I'm really excited about is we're creating an opportunity for young filmmakers and filmmakers that are more experienced to interact more. And we're having a breakfast before the show where the filmmakers in all different age groups can get together and talk about their films and talk about what they've done and where they've gone and where they want to go. And so that really exciting ideas around mentorship and building that community.
The festival will run Friday and Saturday at the Malaspina Theater, with the Cinefix Short Circuit program showing at Friday at 1 p.m., followed that evening with the first half of the VISFF Short Film Program at 7 p.m. Saturday will feature in its third year the VISFF Youth Showcase at 1 p.m., followed by the Youth Goldie Award Ceremony. That evening, the second half of the VISFF Short Film Program will be presented, followed by the Goldie Award Ceremony and After Party. The films can be viewed in person at the theater or streamed digitally online through their virtual festival for those who cannot make it in person. Filmmaker Q&As will follow each evening program, as well as the short circuit showing. Arnold Lim is a filmmaker from Victoria whose film Obscura is being shown this year, his third short film to be featured at the festival. At the 2025 edition of the festival, he won the Best of BC Award for his film My Name is Arnold. Lim spoke to CHY about his film ahead of the festival screening.
Yeah, so Obscura is about a young hikikomori, and a hikikomori is a shut-in, and it's a fairly unknown phenomenon that happens primarily in Asian countries where young people lock themselves in their room, sometimes for several days, sometimes months, and sometimes even years. And so it's about a young hikikomori who clashes with his family and creates a camera obscura to reconnect with his family in the outside world. And we shot it all on Vancouver Island.
Lim says he loves the medium as it allows him to be more concise with how he tells stories. He says his experience as a photo and video journalist gifted him the knowledge to craft his stories.
Having that opportunity helped craft my understanding of what story is and helped me understand better how I wanted to tell stories. And, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes down to any story that is passed through me, is a product of all the stories that have come to me over my lifetime and passed down to me from my parents.
Lim's film will be screened during the second program Saturday evening. Like many of his films, Obscura was filmed on Vancouver Island.
And being someone that is a filmmaker that has grown up and lived in and on Vancouver Island for many of my for most of my life, and where I got married and raised my children, we have an ecosystem of support here that is really special. And I think that across Vancouver Island and Nanaimo for sure as well, we have people who are artists that really hit above the weight class of what our population is. And that's been a special place to cultivate the craft and work on the storytelling ability. And that's really special because art isn't a want for me, art is a need.
He says art in general, no matter the medium, is celebrated and respected in deep, meaningful ways on Vancouver Island. From a film point of view, Lim says Vancouver Island is a special place because it's not an overshot area.
Sometimes I do work in Vancouver, and you often see Vancouver represented as a different place. What I like to do is, whenever possible, however I can, to represent Vancouver Island as Vancouver Island.
Lim says at the core of what makes filming on Vancouver Island special is the flexibility of exteriors, beautiful landscapes to regal architect.
It's a gift for filmmakers. I think it's untapped. I think it's a little bit unseen. I'm grateful for that opportunity. Part of me selfishly hopes that I get to continue to work on here and not have so many people using the same locations. But yeah, I think one of the special things about here is the beautiful landscapes that we have here and the looks that we have here very close to each other, but also the talented filmmakers that we have here. We may not have some of the big names that some other areas have, but we have no less talent here. And I think from a population standpoint, we absolutely hit above our weight class and we have some of the best artists in the world.
The Vancouver Island Short Film Festival starts tomorrow afternoon at the Malaspina Theater at Vancouver Island University. Tickets can be purchased at visff.com or at the door. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This is CICK News. If you've ever thought about getting your nails done for a fraction of the usual price, and maybe walking away with a story or two, there's a unique opportunity happening right here in Coast Mountain College Smithers. A small group of students, ranging from high schoolers as young as 15 to adult learners, are currently training in the college's Nail Technician Certificate Program, and they're looking for real people to practice on. Now, here's the catch. You'll need a little patience. These are students honing their craft, so appointments can take longer than your typical salon visit. But in exchange, you'll get affordable nail art and a front row seat to the next generation of nail techs learning everything from acrylics and gel to client care and even business planning. The public can book appointments during select daytime hours throughout the week. Yesterday, I stopped in to chat with the nail techs, as well as the regional contracts officer and course instructor.
Hi there, my name is Lori Lynn Callio. I'm regional contracts officer for Coast Mountain College based at the Smithers campus. So we have six students, mainly from the Smithers and surrounding area, taking part in our nail technician program here at the Smithers campus. And we are encouraging members of the public to come by so that they can take part in experiential place-based learning. So people who are coming in to get their nails done will need to have a little bit more patience because they're still learning. Mm-hmm. And it may take longer for them to do a procedure than maybe it would at a salon where they're experienced and have done it many, many times. We're open certain hours of the day, so typically Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 9:30 in the morning till noon, and then in the afternoon from 1 to about 2:45 p.m., Fridays 1 to 2:45, so they try and be somewhat accommodating. So with this course, upon successful completion, students will be prepared to write the BC Beauty Council licensing exam. Mm-hmm. So that's something that they would do later after they take this course, and then they could go on and they could even work for an existing salon or potentially open their own salon. With this particular group or cohort, we do have a number of students from Smithers Secondary School taking the program. It's actually running full-time from February 2nd to June 5th, and it's our Nail Technician Certificate Program.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Oh, I'm Izzy.
So this week is Nail Art Week. Is this the most exciting? Like, do you like doing this stuff? Do you like doing the business plan more?
Yeah. No, this is way better than the business plan. Don't tell Dawn, but it is way better. I did a flower with nail foils, and then I tried to do chrome, but it didn't really work. So we're going to have to try that again, and then we'll do rhinestones on this one. And then I actually don't know what the plan is for the last two.
And so are you a recent high school graduate or?
I'm in high school. I'm in grade 10 this year.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. So what inspired you to do this and high school at the same time?
Well, I've done nails like all my life. Like I've done nail polish, and then I've been doing it for the past 2 years. And then I saw the opportunity come up at the high school and I was like, oh my God, that'd be so cool. But like my age was a bit of a factor. So I didn't really think it was going to work out, but then all the pieces kind of fell together and they made an exception for me, which I was really grateful for.
Because what, you had to be 16 to enter this?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, I feel like the semester was hard enough because I had all my academics to get that out of the way. Oh, so it was a bit of a push, but it was worth it.
My name's Amber Lee.
What grade are you in?
12.
What did it take to get into this nail tech course?
So we had to do like an interview, and then there was like a work safety quiz that you had to do.
What was the interview like? Did it feel like a job interview, or what did it feel like?
Yeah, it kind of felt like a job interview. They were just like asking me questions, and like it was because like this course is like one of the most expensive courses that they offer. They're trying to be diligent about that, but also offer to kids what they want to do.
And what's your goal? Do you want to own your own business after this? Do you want to work in a spa for some experience?
I'll probably work in a salon for a bit to get more experience. Mm-hmm. I think I really want to do like a mobile nail service on like the rodeo circuit.
Do a what?
A mobile nail service on the rodeo circuit.
Like, are you also part, like, are you involved with rodeo else?
Yeah.
Okay, what else do you do then?
I just do barrel racing.
Oh, very cool. So, yeah. Well, that would be a great idea.
Well, I also, like, a lot of barrel racers like to get their nails done, but, like, they're traveling every single weekend. So it's, in my head, it's probably a little bit hard for them to make these appointments and to get them done when they're constantly traveling. So I'm like,
That's a
two-in-one.
It's
when
a
they're
beautiful
not
idea.
Racing, they can get this done, but also not have to like travel or like oh, I'm being called, I gotta go.
Yeah. If you're interested in booking an appointment and supporting these students as they build their skills, the public clinic at Coast Mountain College Smithers is open Tuesday through Thursday mornings and early afternoons, or you can visit coastmountaincollege.ca. And just a reminder, bring a little extra time and maybe a bit of curiosity. You may leave with a fresh set of nails and a newfound appreciation for the work that goes into them. That's it for this week's Scoop. Catch us next week, Thursdays at 12 p.m. in Smithers, Thursdays at 4 p.m. in Burnaby, Fridays at 8 a.m. in Nanaimo and weekdays at 7:30 in Prince George. The Scoop was made possible by funding from the Canadian government and the Local Journalism Initiative, a Community Radio Fund of Canada initiative.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser University Radio, streaming on the internet at cjsf.ca. Hey, you're listening. Should I say I'm Jan Arden?
Yeah, that might be a good idea.
Yeah. Okay.
This is CJSF.